Don't be alarmed. The quasi-shimmering light before you is a trans-dimensional gateway to other worlds, other voices, other thoughts, and other realities. Up feels like down, and down feels like the number 7 on a Wednesday morning. Don't worry. That quivering, blood-boiling sensation under your eyebrows is all a part of the charm. Welcome to the PCC Multiverse.
And we're back with another episode of the PCC Multiverse. It's Gerald Glassford coming right back at you here from Pop Culture Cosmos, Inside Sports, Fantasy Football, Game Source, and of course, the Lakers Fast Break. We truly appreciate everyone out there listening to all of our great shows. And if you can, please give us that magical 5-star review, looking at my ugly hand, star review, wherever you get your podcasts. Plus a big shout out to all of our radio stations worldwide that play us all around the world. We give a big salute to you. We don't do it enough, and so we truly appreciate you doing that. Plus also as well, if you could like, share, and subscribe today to get the latest notifications on when we go live with the latest PCC Multiverse, Pop Culture Cosmos, State of Pro Wrestling, Inside Sports, Fantasy Football, and all the great things that we do right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. But it wouldn't be a Pop Culture Cosmos without my good friend, my comrade in arms. Indeed, she is the morning lady, indeed, the morning hostess of everything that goes on in the world of the Ross household, including Wizards and Wine, Wild Beyond Witchlight, and of course, those great shows that she does, which she will talk to you about. She will give you the hard pitch here in just a sec on all of her stuff that she's doing. It is a good friend indeed. It is, of course, the mastermind behind all of that and the terror in her husband's life. He'll say otherwise, you know.
Okay. If he knows what's good for him, he'll say otherwise.
There you go. No, absolutely.
I'm kidding. That's terrible. No, of course.
You could joke about that back in the day, but now it's like 24. What does that mean? Is there some underlying theme?
Yeah. No. Of course there isn't. No.
Of course there isn't. Why is he running back behind you? I see in the.
You're not supposed to point it out.
Yes, it is Melinda Barkhouse Ross. And Melinda, great to have you back as always, my friend. Please go ahead and follow what she's doing today at Wizards and Wine and Vampires and Vitae, indeed. But we've got a great show lined up for you. But before we get into it with us, I want to go ahead and mention here at the 15 minute mark or thereabouts, TJ Johnson stops by. He is highly concerned about Xbox, and rightly so, after they made some serious cuts of some studios, 3 studios, and merged another, including a studio that did put out a much beloved game last year. So what happened? We talk about what's going on with Xbox and how it's not taking a turn for the better, and that's coming up on this show. And I know Josh, who is a big supporter of Xbox, will have something to say on it on the Monday show as well. So we're highly concerned, and we're going to go ahead and talk about it here in a few minutes. But before we do, I want to go ahead and mention that on the back end of the show, it is the debut of a brand new challenge. I was thinking about what to call it. The Melinda Box Office Challenge. That's very safe, kind words.
Expected even.
Yes.
Yep.
But I like Melinda or Die a lot better.
I like that too. I think that's great.
Okay. So we will go ahead and, or Melinda will go ahead and project which will be a hit and which will be a miss in Melinda or Die. That is coming up on the back end of the show as well. But first, my friend, I know why you want to talk Star Trek Discovery in its final season. But before we do, I know we haven't touched on it a whole lot, both either you and I or Don Fobbs, who came up with our May TV report last week. And that is Baby Reindeer. I'm not sure how I was going to approach this show because of its controversial nature. And, you know, it deals with the issue of stalking and it's some serious issues that's been dramatized into a serious form. And it has become, obviously, when you have something that controversial too, and I think just Netflix knows exactly what tones to, you know, what tone to hit because for every thing that they have a miss on, like Zack Snyder's latest movie, and yeah, that don't get me started on that.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, it gave me scars for all the wrong reasons, but and some other stuff. Jerry Seinfeld's Unfrosted, yeah, it left me unfrosted, all right. That's for sure. They do know how to hit with their either true crime stuff or true crime related stuff. And Baby Reindeer has been the talk of Netflix. And you've got to be doing something right or doing something that catches people eye. And I mean, this isn't, it's a drama, but something based off of real life happenings, or at least the people behind the show say that happened. The people that are being accused, or the individual that's being accused, is saying that it didn't happen, that they weren't being, they weren't stalking the individual. So, okay. It's a, he said, she said thing literally at this point in time. So your thoughts on the, I guess the audiences, the worldwide audience that Netflix has being enraptured by Baby Reindeer.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. It's one of those shows that I have in my queue, though. You know, when I get tired of going back and rewatching Blue Eyed Samurai for the fifth time. But just being honest. But no, really, I think that when you have something like a stalking situation, especially the way that I think the show seems to approach it, it's setting up the show to be controversial, for there to be chatter, for people to go and watch the show. I really think that the way that they crafted the show and the way that they wrote about the real life situation is, I mean, obviously it's sensationalized because it's entertainment, but I feel like it's sensationalized maybe a little bit too far with this particular case.
Oh, you think?
I think maybe they went a little bit too far. I don't know. And then, you know, then you have the alleged stalker. I don't know. You know, talking about how that wasn't really the case and it wasn't really going on the way that the show depicted it. And you're like, well, it's an adaptation, so it's never really going to be exactly. But
let me ask you this: has she filed suit yet, or did she file a suit to stop the actual movie from?
Honestly, I've been removed a little bit in the last couple of days, so
well,
I don't know if there has been an update.
The answer is no. So
yeah.
She will, because it's come out to be a success. Had it been a bomb, you know, you really don't want to go ahead and attach on to that. But now that's success, maybe she will file charges against it. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, it's very strange and surreal. And I think that's the way Netflix likes it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at the shows that we have enjoyed the most from Netflix. You know, you've got, I was going to say The Hunger Games. It's not The Hunger Games. You know, the masks with the shapes. Oh my God. Yes.
Oh, Three Body Problem?
No, well, that one as well, but no. I keep wanting to call it Hunger Games. You know, they had all the contestants and they put them all in.
Oh, Squid Game. Squid Game.
Yes, thank you. There it is.
Oh my gosh. I was going, what the heck is wrong with this girl this morning?
I'm wondering what's wrong with myself this morning.
Tiger King. This happened to me like the Tiger King. The same crowd that followed Tiger King so religiously during the pandemic has latched on to this, I think.
It's just absolutely. But I think that the two things kind of coexist in the same Venn diagram, you know? Okay. I think that people who enjoy, because I mean, Squid Games was incredibly dark. So are these shows. I mean, The Tiger King was horrifyingly dark. And I mean, it was ridiculous, yes. But I mean, the whole situation and everything that was happening, it was truly awful stuff. Same thing in this situation, I think. They've managed to find a way to take these stories that have these unbelievable characters in them and turn them into profit.
Okay.
I mean, is there something there to be upset about? Really is the question that we have as an audience, or we should be asking as an audience. But I think that we are a little bit too interested in watching the car crash, to be honest.
Oh, that's not surprising at all. I mean, that's something we've noticed and we've talked about on this show for years. Just the fascination that people have with the surreal, the, you know, taking advantage of others' misfortunes and things of that nature. And in this case, whether or not there was or was not or was or is or whatever, as far as the stalking, it does deal on that a serious subject. And it is more than just a murder by the week type deal when it comes to Netflix. And they have been able to be very successful from it. So I think it just is, speaks of Netflix's key. Yes, they do still have a tendency to just throw anything at the wall and see it stick and see if it sticks. Just like, you know, for, again, that's why you're going to get Zack Snyder junk that he's put out there. That's why you're going to get Jerry Seinfeld's Unfrosted, which has garnered terrible reviews. And they're going to, those action movies that look like they were made on a weekend, you're still going to get those from time to time. But every now and then, Netflix throws something there that gets the world talking, and Baby Reindeer looks like it's it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, let's be honest, some of those action movies that are put together in a weekend, they're not bad, but they're certainly not going to have the kind of chatter around them that Baby Reindeer has.
But before we head to the break, my friend, I wanted to ask you your thoughts on Star Trek Discovery and its final season, going on some sort of chase. You know, it just seems like, okay, they're going after this piece, then they're going after this piece. It's like a scavenger hunt, pretty much a glorified scavenger hunt for all best things concerned. Your thoughts on it? This latest episode didn't endear me when it just dealt with them, or two of the main characters running up a hill, I guess, in order to go ahead and, you know, save the water tower.
I mean,
and,
I mean, we all have our hills to climb, right?
They're reaching at this point on Discovery. It's been a meh series for me, and this is a meh final season from them.
It's certainly going out with a whimper. That's for sure. Yeah. It almost you feels
usually
like,
you usually will defend it.
Like, you'll to the hilt, absolutely, yes.
I remember when you and I went at it on Star Trek Picard season one, and I was just like, you've got to be kidding me.
Come on! No, okay, we can't. It'll devolve if we do that, Gerald. It'll devolve. Yeah, come on! But no, I do think that, you know, Discovery is going out with a bit of a whimper. It almost feels like it's a... Guys, stop being so mean to us at this point, you know, when I'm watching the show. But that might just be because of all of the conversations that we've had. Maybe I feel a little guilty when I watch it. I don't know. But yeah, it's going out with a whimper. I think that Star Trek Discovery may have had more of an opportunity to shine if it wasn't for Strange New Worlds coming out and being so great.
I mean, it even had the opportunity, which Strange New Worlds really didn't, as far as being, you know, it had actually a chance to go on prime time and in front of a broadcast audience and didn't quite materialize. So they put it to Paramount Plus. I just see it as a missed opportunity. And just following the storyline, it is set. People don't understand it. It's set even hundreds of years away from the Kelvin timeline, which you are most everyone out there familiar with. So I'm glad it's ending. I'm finishing it. You know, I said this to Cool Bro the other day, one of our followers, about how I can't watch The Bad Batch or can't finish off The Clone Wars and finish off those entire, because I cannot stay with good, you know, stuff if it doesn't endear me. And then I go hypocritically into this. I've stayed with it through the whole entire series, and I cannot tell you why I did. I cannot tell you why. I just can't. So I guess I'm a hypocrite.
Well, no, I think sometimes you just have to be, you have to be happy to hate something. And, you know, I think
I don't hate it. It's just I'm indifferent.
Well, yeah, but I mean, even indifference really is an opportunity for you to scoff at something when it's on the TV. You're just like, oh God, this is so bad. Why am I even watching this?
Well, I could just say we can thank Star Trek Discovery for Michelle Yeoh's Section 31.
Yeah, very true. Yeah.
And Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, that's true. If nothing else, it gave us those things.
That it did, my friend. But final thoughts on Star Trek Discovery as it finishes all?
maybe this is going to be a case of in 10 years, we're going to look back on it and we're going to be like, this was really great. And we were really mean to this show. Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe.
But maybe. We'll see. Once you can get through that first half season, that was all Klingon stuff and written in Klingon. That wasn't even familiar Klingons. That was unfortunate.
So what are your thoughts out there on Star Trek Discovery and Baby Reindeer? Stalking and spacewalking. Please let us know. Just thought of that one. Pop Culture Cosmos at yahoo.com.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos.
For the latest news and information, analysis and opinions on the Los Angeles Lakers and the NBA, check out the Lakers Fast Break podcast today on wherever you get your podcasts. And we're back with the show. It's the Pop Culture Cosmos. Thanks so much again for watching and listening. Truly appreciated. Xbox. When it comes to Xbox, if you were a follower or a fan, I remember the old days when, I guess, it was the console wars and you always had to go one side or the other. And, you know, I've had various consoles from all the different manufacturers over the years. But I'll be honest with you, I kind of always lean towards Xbox. They're either ease of use, either had the more powerful system or the better interface. With this latest generation of consoles, Xbox, despite the fact that they had the most powerful console, despite the fact they have with the Xbox Games Pass, the best platform to play video games on, they have managed to go ahead and make mistake after mistake after mistake. And I thought after the dust had settled on their acquisition of whatever, how many billions of dollars for Activision, Blizzard, and all the things that comes with it, Call of Duty, Overwatch, Warcraft, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, that, okay, finally, Xbox is on a good path. With the announcements in January of what was upcoming for the year, for what most of Xbox is going to deliver, we saw things like Hellblade, which is coming out here in a couple weeks, Senua's Sacrifice 2, that is coming out here in just a couple weeks, like I said. You had the Machine Games version of Indiana Jones, that's coming out later this year. You might have Obsidian's Avowed. You might have other awesome games finally coming on the way down the pipeline from Xbox. But of course, Xbox, like I often say about the Lakers, just can't stand prosperity, because their recent actions this week for a company that did report profits in the latest quarter, obviously that wasn't mired with the Xbox brand. Because Microsoft and Xbox this past week, they closed three studios and have reassigned another studio to loop into, combined with another developer studio. So yes, Xbox has closed down three studios. They've reassigned another. So with that, the makers of Hi-Fi Rush, the pleasant game that was released, that was just dropped out of nowhere and actually garnered very, very positive reviews. A really good game that's still available now. In fact, it's on actually other platforms now. It's on PlayStation and Xbox. Their developer over in Japan, Tango Gameworks, that was closed. There was the makers of Prey. And unfortunately, last year's disappointment, Redfall, in Arcane Austin, they were shut down. There was the maker of the mobile game, The Mighty Doom, Alpha Dog Games, that was closed. And Roadhouse Studios will be absorbed into ZeniMax Online Studios, makers of The Elder Scrolls Online. So for a company that has made some very questionable decisions in the past, is this continuing that trend because of the fact that it's gotten so much of a PR backlash in the past few days. And here to discuss that, as far as that, should we still stay Xbox fans at all? Should Phil Spencer be fired? All these things, as far as it's concerned, when it concerns Xbox, a good man here is indeed one of the also good supporters of Xbox, who probably feels a lot of hurt, a little betrayal, so much more like I do. It is TJ Johnson, and TJ, glad to have you here. I know when I speak to Josh here on the weekend, he is not exactly going to be thrilled when he talks about this. And I know when I spoke to you and you reached out to me, you were not as well.
Yeah. First and foremost, Gerald, as always, thanks so much for allowing me the opportunity to be on the show. Always a pleasure. Even when we're talking about things in, you know, the vein or the nature of layoffs in regards to Microsoft. So thank you again for having me here on the Pop Culture Cosmos. I love doing that. It doesn't look good. And I want to be very, 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 very clear and very transparent in what I'm thinking here. I'm a gamer, first and foremost. Like you, I've owned multiple consoles. I think I probably would agree with saying that I lean more Xbox in regards to my preference. It would definitely be more Xbox than PlayStation, than Nintendo. And sometimes those two are switched, because right now I'm playing my Nintendo more than I'm playing my PlayStation. But my point in saying that is I've always definitely leaned more Xbox. But again, I'm a gamer, so I really don't identify. If I had to self-identify, I self-identify as a gamer. But with that being said, before all that, I'm a human being. And this is exactly the type of thing that people were concerned about with this acquisition, with this Blizzard Activision acquisition. This is exactly what they were talking about. There is zero reason that Microsoft should have been as aggressive as they were in regards to these buying of so many different developers and whatnot. If within 12 months of this acquisition officially happening, you're closing studios, you're trying to consolidate and restructure whatever structure it is that you guys are going for, and it's costing people jobs, it's costing people their livelihood, which I understand it's a dog-eat-dog world, and it's corporate America, and they have a system and a way that they do things, and I get it, but I don't, because the optics of it, Gerald, the optics of it don't look good. This was supposed to be a good thing, purchasing up these smaller studios, are purchasing up these studios and allowing them to be part of the Microsoft umbrella, and all these pro developer tweets that Phil Spencer was sending, all these pro developer tweets that Mike Greenberg was sending out. Everybody was pro developer, pro giving them opportunity to do the things that they want to do, pro giving them the opportunity and the latitude to create the games that they wanted to create, pro all of this. And then to have something of this egregious nature happen in 48 hours ago, 24, 48 hours ago, 36 hours, whatever the time frame is, it's disheartening. It really is disheartening. It feels like everything that all the PlayStation pundits, all the talking heads on the internet, including ourselves, everything that everybody was fighting about not happening is exactly what happened. I feel like not that we've been lied to. I feel like this is probably the first time that I truly think Microsoft doesn't know what it wants to do. It doesn't want to be a software company and doesn't want to just be a third-party developer, but it doesn't want to continue to pour resources into their own first-party development studios. Like, these are the studios that you purchased, and you gave these people this sense of security in their jobs, a sense of security in being able to have the creative freedom to do what they wanted to do, the flexibility on getting that done because of the huge umbrella that Microsoft is and the enormous amounts of money that they have to throw at this type of stuff. You gave them this idea that they could do that. and then to have the rug pulled out from under them, which I'm sure the vast majority of them feel like has happened, is very disheartening. And for a company that is already on its heels in regards to public opinion, Joe, this is a very, very slippery slope that Microsoft finds himself on right now. And I just don't, we have to be very, very clear that in this day and age of instant hot takes, in this day and age of instant media and instant access to information, that is very easy for us, myself included in that us, but it's very easy for us to have these very instant takes and instant reactions and maybe even knee-jerk reactions. These type of stuff, I know it happens in business all the time. But because we live in a day and age where we have so much more access to information, whether it happened so much in the past or not, it was not as visible as it is right now. And I think that, especially being blue collar, understanding how hard I work for my dollar and understanding what it takes to put food on our table and a roof over our head, the idea that Microsoft would purchase these companies just to shut them down, ultimately, it doesn't sit well with me. And I think that's the maturity that I've had as a human being, as a man, as a father, as a provider. My idea on what I want to support does not align with that. I was very, very adamant in my distaste for Sony at the time and how I had stopped supporting Sony from the standpoint I stopped buying product, I stopped playing the platform. I mean, you know, it's really more of an egg in my face because I bought the platform already, so now I'm not paying. I wasn't playing what I bought, but it was my way of sticking it to them. So now I feel like my ideals don't line up with the company that I was supporting, or, you know, predominantly supporting in Microsoft. I don't know what message they're trying to send anymore, and it's disheartening. Just as a human being, but, you know, take the human being aspect out of it now that we've talked about that as a gamer, because you want companies to have the opportunity to create something new. Everybody continues to focus on Gears of War 5, Halo 17, the next iteration of whatever, but
Fable, whatever.
Fable 35, like whatever the number is, right? We continue to focus on these next iterations of these same titles. But where's the freedom to create? Where's the freedom to create the next Fable, create the next Gears of War, create the next big thing that's going to take this current console generation, which has been lackluster to say the very, very least, and propel it to the next generation? I don't see how this is garnering support. I don't see how this is gaining trust of, one, first and foremost, all these new employees that you have. You're not gaining their trust. You're not gaining the trust of the public. You're continuing to take black eye after black eye in the court of public opinion. It's not pretty, and it has not been pretty for Microsoft for a while. I mean, we finally had a victory in being able to close that deal, and then we turn around and show exactly why we probably shouldn't have did the deal in the first place, because we don't have the resources to take care of all these different developers that we've acquired. Right. So now we don't have the resources to take care of them, but we bought them all. And we've given these people this idea that they have a false sense of security, or that they have a sense of security, which we've come to prove that is now false. That security is false. They don't have security because they were just let go.
Well, you talk about not having the room to fail. In the case of Tango Gameworks,
they were successful. They were successful.
I don't get it. I just don't get it.
You can't win for losing. Yeah. You can't lose for winning. Like, I don't understand. You were successful. You were literally, nobody seen you coming. And if we're going to be fair, Microsoft was the beneficiary of that, because that game was in development since 2017. This was before the Bethesda acquisition. This was before that acquisition. So technically, Microsoft didn't have anything to do with that game outside of, you know, whatever the last polishing or the last final touches. They were the beneficiary of that game because it was been in development since 2017. So that was before this acquisition was even a thought, but this is before anything was actually really, really, really considered. And yet, even with their success, they were still laid off.
You're listening to the Pop Culture Cosmos. Don't touch that dial. Wait, do people still use dials? What is Planet Cool Stuff? It's your ultimate destination for insightful exploration from the realm of pop culture. Delve into the world of movies, video games, toys, cartoons, and visit with one-of-a-kind creators, discover incredible places, and see historical artifacts. Whether it's a toy room tour or exploring the best of pop culture cinema, Planet Cool Stuff has got you covered. Planet Cool Stuff, exclusively on Jinx Esports TV Canada.
So we're rewarding these people that are winning by taking away their jobs? Like, this really seems backwards to me. And the even more frustrating part of that is that these are companies, I just want to be able to feel good about who I'm supporting in everything, you know, and while we don't want to get politicky here, in politics, I want to feel good about who I'm supporting. In life, I want to feel good about who I'm supporting. I want to be able to give my money to people who I feel deserve to have my business. And when you start incorporating shady practices, and that's not what I'm saying Microsoft is doing. I want to be clear. I'm not saying that they're having any shady practices. But what I can tell you is that this doesn't look good. They don't have a vision. They don't know who they want to be or what they want to be. And I've been a firm supporter of Phil Spencer on this show. I've been a firm supporter of Phil Spencer. In general, I've been a firm supporter of Phil Spencer. If there was ever a time that he needs to be on the hot seat, it's right now. It's right now. I don't know how much more goodwill he thinks he has with the gaming community or with Wall Street, whomever. I don't know how much more goodwill he thinks he's garnered or how much he has left, but I can tell you whatever he thinks he has is less than half of that. Like, it's really, it's getting to the point now we've heard enough promises. We've heard enough yay, rah, rah, rah. I'm pro gamer, blah, 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 blah. You know, for as big as the Game Pass push has been, I can tell you I've probably played maybe 2, maybe 3 games on Game Pass since I've had it that I had not had the, that I wouldn't have played if I didn't have Game Pass.
Okay, because that's all I do. That's when I just now play games that I would not have played on Games Pass. So for me, I try to take advantage of it at all possible. So.
And you should. And you absolutely should. And I should. But I'm very much a victim of, that looks good, I want it, now I'm going to play it. And I don't have a lot of time. So for me, what works for me is playing games that I've already kind of been more familiar with. And that I don't have to work as hard to try to get into as far as from a just getting into the game standpoint. So for me, I haven't been able to really take advantage of the Game Pass as much as I'd like to. But I say that to say it hasn't been as important and clearly hasn't been as much of a selling point as they thought it would be, considering the fact that now they've only been going up in the single digits on Game Pass for, you know, as of recent. I don't know exactly the time that they're looking at, but it hasn't grown the way that they thought it was going to grow. And at this point now, they have to start reevaluating once again what it is they want to do, who it is that they want to be. And the concern with that is you guys are supposed to have known this already. You guys are supposed to have known who you wanted to be and have been making progress towards getting there. We are now in the fourth year of this console generation, and we still don't have a direct vision. We still don't have a mission statement. We still don't have the blueprint for who it is we want to be or what it is that we want to do. And that's concerning. That should be very concerning to Microsoft fans. That should be very concerning to people that work directly for Phil Spencer or for Microsoft. I don't know. It's tough when you're online and you're trying to be a fan and you're trying to be a supporter of a particular brand. You know, I don't have a problem with console wars. I think that they're a bit excessive at times, but I want you to root for who you want to root for, right? Just as long as you keep it friendly. But it's harder and harder to defend Microsoft as of late. It really, really is. It's getting very difficult from the lack of quality first-party games, first-party software, to the lack of innovation, to the lack of now support for their development teams. It's weird. It's a weird time to be a Microsoft fan.
Once again, it is TJ Johnson. He's going to stop by here and continue our conversation on Xbox and what's going on there. I am sorry for all the individuals that have lost jobs in regards to this week. It's very, very tough. This year as a whole has been very tough on the video game industry. And I know that very much, you know, there's a lot of questions going forward about the industry as a whole. I can get the Arcane Austin closure, you know, and I this is a business. I understand that. Redfall was a high-priced disaster. And seeing the numbers today from Warner Brothers that they posted, that it looks like for them, they will have a $200 million write-off. Yes. $200 million write-off when it concerns the Suicide Squad game. That's bad. And I can understand that. But it also tells you that you can't have a failure. You can't have a failure at all. And even in the case of Tango Gameworks, you just can't have a game that is beloved by those who play it. You need, whether it's good or bad, just a popular game. It's just all about dollars and cents. It's just becoming, you know, that whether it's a free to play, whether it's games, lives of service, whether
microtransactions.
Yeah. Does not matter. Your game doesn't matter if it's good or bad. At this point, it's just all about numbers at this point. It's just clear that it's no longer about the industry, about the gamer, about having cult hits, or about growing something as far as a fan base going forward. No, it's all about making the dollars and cents and making it now.
Yeah, it is. And you know, we've always known that money has been the driving force for a lot of for all of business, for most business decisions. The problem with that is that you have these darling developers and these darling companies. Like I'll look at, there's a huge game, or not, actually, that wasn't a huge game. It was a game that was very, very well loved, and it was received very, very well, but it just didn't sell gangbusters. I'm talking about Beyond Good and Evil. It's one of my favorite games from the first, the eighth generation of consoles, so the original Xbox. One of my favorite games of all time. The world building, everything about it was fantastic. Cult classic, because it didn't get hot until well after it was gone. And then people started realizing how good of a game it was. We've been trying to get a sequel from Ubisoft for that game for 10 years. 10 years they've been working on a sequel for that game. We haven't got it yet. I use that example to say that it didn't sell well, and because it doesn't sell well, and if it doesn't sell well, it gets very hard for anybody to move forward with those particular projects. Another recent game, you look at a game like Days Gone, that was released on the PlayStation 4, I want to say. People did not play it at first. People didn't play it, and then with it being part of the Legacy or the Essentials collection on the PlayStation 5, people got a chance to be reintroduced to what the team at Bend Studio did and realized, hey, this is actually a pretty good game, and wanted to fight for a sequel, but it was too late. It was too late. Nobody wanted a sequel at that point. The developers said that Sony wasn't interested in the sequel because it didn't sell well the first time. So I say that to say it's always been about the money. As unfortunate as it is, it's always been about the money. But now, this would not be as huge of a deal if A, Microsoft didn't fight so hard for this acquisition. B, Microsoft was not continuously taking hit after hit after hit to their public image. And C, we wouldn't do things like have a game that sells extremely well to turn around and close their studio. Now, I mentioned that the game has been in development since 2017, Hi-Fi Rush. Really had nothing to do with Microsoft. So I would venture to think that Microsoft was probably like, this isn't going to sell very well. It's not going to be very well received. we just need to get this game out. Very similar to Redfall. They knew that they didn't have a hidden Redfall. They knew that it wasn't going to be good. They said, let's just go ahead and get it out. Get it out, and we'll move forward. I think that they were definitely not expecting Hi-Fi Rush to be what it was. And because they weren't expecting it to be what it was, I think that they probably knew that they were going to be taking a huge hit as far as the public, court of public opinion, when it turned out to be as good as well received as it was. I think that they did this acquisition knowing that they were probably going to close those studios before the acquisition was completed, because they probably looked down their pipeline and seen what they had going on and realized that it probably didn't align with their vision. So I say all that to say, I'm sure that this is shocking to us, but they knew what they were doing all along. And the fact that Hi-Fi Rush was as well received as it did, as it was, put more of a problem for them, because now we're the ones having a conversation, right? How do you have a game that sells as well as Hi-Fi Rush and was received as well as them, and then you turn around and close the studio? I don't think that they were prepared for it to do what it did. And it kind of goes back to the point of, I don't know who they want to be. I don't know what they want to do or who they are trying to appease at this point anymore. If it's just the shareholders, then just say it's the shareholders. Just become a third-party software company and worry about publishing games on other consoles that have the Microsoft logo on it, if that's what you want to do. But if you want to continue to appease gamers and appeal to the gaming community, which is what all the talking heads seem to say, all the Phil Spencers and the Aaron Greenbergs, and that's what they all are saying. However, nothing that Microsoft has done has proven that. And I think we're tired of the talk. We're tired of hearing about it. At some point, you need to put up or shut up. And I think we're ready for, if we're not, we're getting really, 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 really close to being ready for Phil Spencer to just shut up.
And that is unfortunately the case for myself. I think very similarly to you, it's very concerning right now as an Xbox owner what the future of the platform would be. But if you're not going to fully commit to it by making the moves or saying one thing and doing the other, it does not look good for Xbox right now. And that's very disappointing indeed for the industry as a whole and what the future of it may be. But TJ, I just cannot thank you enough for stopping by. Hopefully next time you and I can talk about something a little bit more cheerful. But any last thoughts, my friend, before we head on out?
I can't wait to talk about the season finale of X-Men. That's going to be fun.
Okay.
That's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, I do want you back for that. I know that a lot of Marvel announcements are being made. Even though that the number of movies and TV shows per year, according to Bob Iger, were going to be reduced, there's still is always excitement there.
You know, I don't know if I agree, and I'm sure we can touch on that on another show, but I think as long as you can put out quality content, you don't need to put a number on how much you're going to put out. You know, say 3 movies and, you know, 3 TV shows, that's great. But if you can create quality content and you can put out 4 movies or 5 movies and they are all quality films, then you put them out. I think it's just a matter of you really needing to stay in touch with what the audience is looking for, and being able to tell a cohesive story and not have us guess at what you're trying to do all the time. But I digress. That's a conversation for another day.
That's why I have him on the show. He does it better than anyone. It is TJ Johnson. TJ, it is so great to have you here. I will fire up my Xbox later tonight in honor of you, my friend, even though it may become an antiquity here at some point in time in the not too distant future, the way that Xbox is going at this rate, but we will see. I know that Xbox will be on the tip of our tongues at some point in time down the road once again, because, you know, they just can't help themselves. Plus, with E3, not E3, around the corner, there's going to be much to discuss in regards to the video game industry in the not too future, and we'll do it right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos.
If you're tired of sifting through flea markets for rare and unique games, we can help. Retro City Games in Henderson, Nevada, only 5 minutes from the Las Vegas Strip, has all your favorite gaming staples, classics, and a wide selection of rare games with new stuff always appearing on our shelves. Come in and chat with Nicole or Doug about your love of games and watch as they help you complete your collection or find your childhood favorite. And don't forget, Retro City Games loves trade-ins. So if you have any Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Sega, Xbox, PlayStation, or even PC games, come in and visit Retro City Games today. Welcome to the new metropolis of gaming, Retro City Games.
And we're back to close out the show. It's the PC Multiverse. Want to thank TJ Johnson so much for stopping by to talk Xbox with us. For those watching on YouTube, I will pop up that video of TJ and I here later on sometime this weekend. I will go ahead and be able to do that. So you'll be able to check it out in its entirety. But not just check it out in audio form right here at the Pop Culture Cosmos. But before we head it out, it is the game show of all game shows that Melinda has decided to partake in. I named it first the Melinda Box Office Challenge, but she likes better Melinda or Die.
It just has a better ring to it.
Okay. So with that said, my friend, this has actually been a funner show than I thought. I didn't know if I'd stay awake for it, but
delirium of 4:30. That's what it is.
There you go. Absolutely. Yeah. So I ask you, my friend, we're going to go ahead and preview some of the big movies coming out this summer. Sorry, Chris Pine's Pool Man. We will not be covering you. Unfortunately, he's been getting some bad reviews for that one. I feel bad for him because it's his first directorial debut. And
looks like that's always rough. Yeah,
it might be his last. But when it comes right down to it, it starts off this weekend with Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. I want to ask you this. It looks like it's projecting towards a $50 million box office, I guess, bonanza here domestically, probably closing in on $100 million worldwide. It isn't a huge success, but after last week's kind of stumble with the Fall Man, with the Fall Guy, who actually did do a fall. This is a step a little bit in the right direction. Your thoughts on this. Will this eventually, Melinda, or will it die?
I think it's going to die.
Really? So you think it's just all front loaded?
I do. Yeah, I do. I think that the Planet of the Apes films are not, how am I going to put this? The Planet of the Apes movies are really, to me, the same as like the monster movies, like Godzilla and that stuff, where you have your dedicated fan base. They're going to come out the first weekend, first 2 weekends. They're going to support the crap out of it. And then they've seen it and it's going to fall off.
Okay.
That's what I think. And maybe I'm wrong. It's also entirely possible that I just don't get Planet of the Apes.
Well, I don't exactly get it either. It has just, you know, I don't know which has a more confusing timeline, Planet of the Apes or Fast and Furious. I think they both have a lot of money, but
right.
Yeah, if you asked me to go ahead and tell you both timelines, I really just would say, can I just take a pass? But it is what it is. People seem to like them. They seem to generate enough money for 20th Century Fox, now Disney. So we'll see what happens. It's garnered positive reviews. And we'll just say that, you know what, we wish it the best of luck, but it is now a die for at this point in time. So we have a die for the Planet of the Apes. If comes up as the next big high profile movie release, and that comes up on the 17th, my friend. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts on Ryan Reynolds' imaginary friend, Melinda or die?
I think that one's going to die as well.
Ooh, my goodness.
She is tough before 9 a.m. She is tough.
I guess so. All right. Why do you think it's going to die?
I think that it's going to, I think that there's a funny space for this movie. And I think that once you have filled that space, it's just going to, everything is just going to move on. I think that it's a very, very tight, little tiny little, like almost like a psychograph of a demograph that is going to find the movie appealing. It'll be different, I think, when it's time for it to no longer be in theaters and it starts coming to streaming. I think it may be more successful there. But yeah, I don't think it's going to do super well.
All right. Well, there you go. The Memorial Day weekend here in the U.S. is a pretty good time for movies. You know, there's a lot of celebratory things that are going on, but people just like around July 4th, they do seem to get a chance to go to the movies traditionally, although in this box office realm right now, Melinda, anything is game, because it really is just not performed as well the box office as in recent years. Even, you know, you could say because the pandemic had a lot to do with it, but even compared to 22 and 23, 24 is not getting off to a great note. During the Memorial Day weekend, Furiosa, a Mad Max saga with Anya Taylor-Joy and Chris Hemsworth, and then the Garfield movie with Chris Pratt, who, if you told me Chris Pratt, what role is he playing? Oh, he's playing John, right? The dude that, you know, Garfield is messing with. No, no, no. Chris Pratt is Garfield. So your thoughts on this, on if Furiosa or the Garfield movie or both will be a Melinda or die?
I think Furiosa is going to do really well. I think it's going to surprise people. I think that the last movie I thought was great, and I just have a feeling that this one is going to do well. Specifically, I mean, that cast, right? They're so good. I mean, she was wonderful in The Menu. She was so good. I can only see more good things coming from that. So I think that movie is going to do well. I think it's going to maybe hang around, maybe linger around at the box office a little bit longer than it should. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to do all right. Garfield is going to do well for like 3 weeks, I think, and then it's going to start to fall off.
Okay.
I just don't know that there's enough people who are still interested in Garfield. But, you know, obviously the studios know something I don't.
Well, that's the thing. When they're betting on nostalgia,
yeah,
especially on a character like that, that hasn't been part of the zeitgeist for kids television for quite some time.
Yeah. And Bill Murray was the last guy to voice Garfield, and you're gonna Chris Pratt to replace Bill?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not 100%
sure
on that one. Yeah, that might be a die on that one. Speaking of dying, around June 6th and June 7th is what comes up next as far as a big movie. You could say The Ballerina, which is an offshoot of the John Wick saga, or you could also say The Watchers, which starts, like we were talking about before on the show, The Summer of Shyamalan, which is actually the daughter, one of the daughters, Shyamalan, directing that one, or Bad Boys Ride or Die. So I have any thoughts on that myself in regards to that, but first, I get it to you. Melinda or die on any one of those films?
I think The Watcher, I don't like scary movies, but I'm so excited to go watch The Watchers.
Okay.
Like, I can't wait. I already have my friend lined up to go and see the movie with me. It looks like The Watchers are going to be what's going to get me back into the movie theaters.
About time something that Dune didn't do it for you.
I know. I still can't believe that I am. Anyway, there's a lot wrong in my life right now, and getting to the movies is one of those things that is wrong. I think that Watchers is going to do okay. I don't think it's going to outperform anything, but I think it's going to like do a solid take at the box office.
Okay.
What were the other movies that you mentioned in that?
Ballerina, which is an offshoot of the John Wick saga.
I desperately want that to do well, but I don't know that a John Wick movie, potentially without John Wick, is going to work.
He's in it, but kind of not. It's more about Ana de Armas' character.
Yeah, which, okay, I mean, sign me up for that. I'm okay with going to watch that. I do think it's really interesting, and I think that that was such a interesting part of the movie when you started to explore more of that world and the stuff that John Wick could come up through. So the ballerina stuff, I'm super curious about. I can't wait to see it.
And then Bad Boys Ride or Die.
Right. Well, you know, Will Smith had to start somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It might as well be with that one. I don't know if it's going to do well. And I also don't know that it's going to be the fault of what happened at the Oscars. I just don't know that there's enough Big Willie style left for people to go running to the box office when he puts out a movie anymore. I would love to be wrong about that, but.
Next thing that comes up that I would say would be something big is Inside Out 2 on the 14th of June. Do you think that this will reignite the hopes out there for fans of Pixar. Will it Melinda or will it die?
I think it's going to Melinda hard. Okay. I do. I mean, the first one, what was it, like 800 million globally or something?
It's and everybody still remembers the heartbreaker on that one. Yes.
Oh, man. Like, it's so good. And really, that's why you go to a Pixar movie, is to have those feels tugged on a little bit. And I do think that, you know, the addition of the characters that they're bringing in for the new emotions and stuff like that are fantastic. I get to the next evolution in kids who may have grown up since they've watched Inside Out, and now are starting to deal with more of those new emotions that they're bringing into the movie. So again, I think that they have managed to find the right tone. I think they've managed to find the right time to release the movie to appeal to some of the kids who watched the first movie. I just think that it's really smart. It's really clever. And I am here for anything that teaches kids about emotions and how to deal with them.
Next up on the list is on the 28th, and that's A Quiet Place Day One. So tell me if you would think that Lupita Nyong'o's performance will help catapult this into a Melinda or die.
I want it to be Melinda. I do. I want it to do well. I'm not sure if it's going to, but I really am kind of, if there is a movie this summer that I'm pulling for, I guess it's that one.
Despicable Me 4 on July 3rd. I mean, this one has a really high chance of Melinding.
It does, yeah. And I think that it's, I don't know that it's going to do as well as the last movie did, or I'm just trying to remember now exactly what the last movie did. Sorry, it's less my brain.
You're talking about the Minions or the...
The last movie that, yeah, I suppose. The last Minions.
They alternate the Minions and the Despicable Me 3s.
Right, yeah, okay. Anyway, so the last Despicable Me movie, it did okay, didn't it? Which one was it?
Yes, they've over $1 billion, so yes.
Yeah, I'm sure this one is probably going to do all right. Yeah, even if it does badly, over $1 billion, even if it does badly and only brings in 500 million, shucks.
The week before Deadpool and Wolverine come out, mm-hmm, is Twisters. Glenn Powell, I don't know if you're on that train yet, if you think he can carry, you know, anything but you did well, but Sydney Sweeney was also part of that, but she hasn't done well and stuff. Other than that, as of yet, I still think the future is bright for her. And I see him now being attached to everything known to man. He signed up with the next J.J. Abrams movie, and he's doing other stuff as well. He's the hot name in Hollywood. Is his name big enough now to carry Twisters to a Melinda, or will it get circled up and die?
The Twister movie was such a moment in pop culture history. It really was. And I'm afraid that this is going to fall under the bus of, we just brought it back because we needed to make money. And because of that, I'm not sure that it's going to do very well. I think that audiences are getting much more savvy, much more hip to that. And I think that the audiences are going to start responding to things that they don't like, and they're going to start responding to it in very big ways. And they're probably much happier to stay home than to go and check out Twister 2 in theaters. I don't think he's got it anymore.
Wow. So with that said, those were just a taste of some of the summer expected box office movies to hit the top of the charts, or maybe miss and become the next big box office bombs. Of course, there's always your low budget horror movies, which might come into play, and surprise movies as well, which we'll always report on. But what are your thoughts? Which movies do you think will Melinda or die? Please let us know. PopCultureCosmos@yahoo.com. Got to remember that Melinda or die. That's we got to play this game again for the fall season or winter, right? Season. Yes.
Yeah. I'm just glad that my name is synonymous with something making a lot of money. That's really great. Okay. Fair enough. I'm living vicariously through the box office.
Let's hope you Melinda and do not die.
Yes.
I wonder how we would phrase that to Robbie, your husband.
I'm not sure. You know what? I'll just tell him the story and he'll just spit it out. He'll just know. That's Melinda. What he does.
Robbie, do you Melinda or die?
Yeah, he'd be like, well, I hope I Melinda a lot, but...
Yay! And on that note, it's another beautiful day in paradise right here in the PCC multiverse. We thank you for listening. And here's hoping you have yourself a great day.